Okay, so continuing with Koheles, Ecclesiastes. Now, today we're still in Perek Aleph. We'll do Psukim Yud Bet through Yud Ches, 12 to 18. It's funny because, you know, Kohelet already introduced himself and told you who he was. Basically, he didn't say Shlomo, but he told you who he is. But now he kind of reintroduces himself. And you have a kind of repetition of some of the themes that we had last week. So he writes, he says, Ani Koheles, I am Kohelet, Haiti Melech al Yisrael b'Yerushalayim. I was the king over Israel in Jerusalem. And we'll come back to that interesting phraseology that he has there. But he once again says, this is part of how we know that it's Shlomo HaMelech, because before he said, you know, that he was, we know that he's a son of a king, he's the king, and like, who else, you know, we can, by process of elimination, we can determine that he's the son of King David. He's also the king in Yerushalayim, and Minasati Libi Lidrosh Letur B'Chachma. And he's also the one who, you know, it says in Malachim that he, when he was given one wish, his one wish was for wisdom, for Chachma. But it wasn't just that he was just given Chachma. You know, it's like they say, like, many people go to rabbis and ask the rabbi for a blessing to be a Torah scholar. You think that's a good thing to ask a rabbi for in a blessing? Well, it is a good thing, but you can't just be wise, you know, you have to, like, work at it. So he says, V'nasati ad libi lidrosh l'Torah, I put my mind to study and to probe wisdom. B'chachma al kol asher nasa tachat ha-shamayim. About everything that happens underneath the heavens, all the things in the world. Hu inyan ra nasan elokim livnei ha-adam lanospo. And it's a bad thing that God gave us to be concerned about. I don't know, it's already an interesting phrase. We'll look at some of the commentaries, but, like, it sounds like it's great. Be wise. We all want to be wise, no? But it's caused a lot of struggle and heartache to Shlomo HaMelech. So then he says, and think about these phrases also. Tachat HaShemayim. Re'isi es kol ha-ma'asim shenasu tachat ha-shemesh. I've seen all the things that happen under the sun. Isn't that interesting? Before he said Tachat HaShemayim, now Tachat HaShemesh, which is already the second time he said it in this book, and we're only in this, you know, first chapter. And by the way, it's the only time this phrase comes up in all of Tanakh, Tachat HaShemesh, beneath the sun. Constantly, Shlomo says, nothing new underneath the sun, right? Ein Chadash Tachat HaShemesh. That's a unique verse, a unique phrase for Kohelet. Actually, just had a patient last week who died, and the husband shared with me that she wrote, like, some notes before she died, and one thing she wrote was, nothing new underneath the sun. He understood it to mean that she was saying, because I was asking, how are you doing? And she wrote, she couldn't talk, she wrote back, nothing new under the sun. He took it to mean that she was saying, like, no matter what's going on, whatever's happening in my life, I can deal with it. Anyways, this is a unique phrase to Koheles, under the sun. But the previous pasuk, it said, in kol shenase tachat hashemayim, underneath the heavens. It's a different phrase. Right? Any insights? What do you think is the difference? Nothing. He's put his mind to examine all wisdom under the heavens, and then as he's seen all the actions underneath the sun. What's the difference between underneath the sun and underneath the heavens? Yeah.
The sun is just a small part of our sun.
Right, it's much smaller. Much smaller area, yeah.
The grammar might not work out, but in Pasuk Yud-Gimel, he says, like, everything, all the wisdom that was done under
the Shemaim, yeah.
As opposed to, kol ha-ma'asim shenasu tachat ha-shemesh. So maybe, like, he's looking at the universe in Pasuk Yud-Gimel, and then in Pasuk Yud-Gimel, it's just things that...
Like human actions. Uh-huh. Interesting. Right. That does fit. Also, I mean, keep in mind that, like, one of the points here is that nothing makes sense tachat hashamayim, meaning as far as we can understand, nothing makes sense. But in other words, it does make sense. There is a deeper reason for things, but just tachat hashamayim, meaning below the heavens, it doesn't make sense. But in other words, above the heavens or in the heavens, it does make sense. There is a reason for things. And then, yeah, tachat hashemesh, it seems to be like, yeah, actions that can be seen. Also, it's like under the sun, things that you can see that, you know, that implies like during time, during working hours, like it's actions. Anyways, so then he says, we'll go back to each verse, m'uvas lo yuchal itkon. A twisted thing cannot be made straight. Chisaron lo yuchal limanot. And something that's lacking can't be made to be fitting. Sometimes we try to make everything work. We try to make it work out. We try to make things okay. But he's saying, like, things are just messed up and it just can't be made better. It's kind of depressing. But I still think it's something, he's talking about something deeper there. Like, as things seem to us, they can't be made better, even though they are better in their actual source. Dibarti anim libi. I spoke to my heart. Lemor, ani hinehi higdalti vosafti chachma. I have grown up and acquired wisdom. Al kol asher haya lifanei al Yerushalayim. On everything happening before me, Jerusalem. Velibi ra'a harbe chachma v'das. And in fact, I saw, and in fact, Jerusalem is known as a city of wisdom. I saw a lot of wisdom and a lot of good things before me. So there's something positive, right? Finally, something to be happy about. I think it's going to last long. That na libi ladas chachma v'das, and I tried to learn, wisdom, v'das, hololus v'sichlus yadati, and I learned that it's all, hololus means like a waste, folly, you know, madness. Shagam zehu rayon ruach, and all this is just searching out ruach, searching out the wind, breath, just chasing breath. It's all worthless. Ki berov chachma, rov kas, and I realized the more wisdom you have, the more anger you get. The Yosef dat, Yosef machov, a famous line. The more you know, the more pain you have. Ignorance is bliss, in other words. Maybe, right? Basically he's saying, you know, as he was the king, he experienced everything, and he sought it all out, and it basically left him disappointed. He's frustrated. So let's look at each verse and try to understand what's going on in these psukim. Because obviously there's more here, but it's very realistic. I mean, it's a little bit depressing, but it's also realistic. And stick with it, because there is a point that he's trying to make. So let's see a few points of each verse. Let's analyze each verse, and I want to hear your thoughts as well. So back to the first one. Ani kvel hayti melech Yisrael b'Yerushalayim. I was the king of Israel in Jerusalem. The Mechilta there, the first source says, Ani kvel hayti melech b'Yerushalayim, ze haya tchilas ha-sefer. So this was the beginning of the book. That should be the beginning. He's introducing himself. V'lama nichtov kan. Why is it written here? Because we have this principle that there's no order in the Torah. But that's usually with the stories. Like in Bereishit, sometimes, and Shmos especially, like sometimes the stories are out of order and they're put in the order of the Torah for a certain reason. But why would Koheles, he's giving like wisdom, like why would he introduce himself already in the 12th verse? Unless maybe this is actually part of the whole point. Look at in the next piece. The Torah Tmima says there, "Kolomar shesider adavarim kafi haragashos she'ala alibo." He's just talking and just like pouring out his heart as things came to his mind. Afa pishalos al seder hanyanim. Even though it doesn't make sense or in a matter of being organized, he just wanted to share. Like he's just pouring out his heart. So now it's a stream of conscience. Exactly. So now he's saying, you know what? I was king. I was the king. And to be king, you have to be very wise. And I found that the wisdom was worthless. Yeah.
Maybe he's saying, I didn't become king because I was wise. I became king for other reasons. And then I tried to figure out how to be wise.
Which is true. Right. He only became wise after he was king.
Right.
He became king because his father is. Exactly. Right. Yes.
So.
Interesting.
He was trying to self-justify.
Right. I found myself in this role as king, so I decided to become wise, and I thought that would justify me being king, and then I found that it didn't do it for me. Right. By the way, I skipped the first, that Ibn Ezra on the top of the page I put there, it's from last week, but Ibn Ezra points out that he argues there is an order. He says, Adhena divrei shlomo al derech klal. That, previous until now, it was talking about general principles. Viata now yachil leveir kol devarim shi'alu al halev. And now he's just starting to say, okay, I talked about general things. Now I'm going to talk about things that come, whatever comes to my heart. So, it's a lot of it is about wisdom. So we'll have to talk about it. But Rashi there, so turn the page to page 2. Rashi there says, I was the king. We know that Koheles was king of a great empire. So in addition, I like your point, Reno, that it was about like what happened after he became king. He's also reflecting now on his rule. And Rashi, as Rashi points out, but it's something we know, he was al kol ha'olam. He was king over the whole world. He had a huge empire. Ulebesof al Yisrael. And then he was king over just Israel. Ulebesof al Yushalayim. And then not even all of Israel. Just Jerusalem. Levada. Ulebesof al Makli. And eventually I was only king over my own walking stick. That's about as far as my domain went. And that's why he says, Shari Nemar, Haisim Melech B'Yushalayim Aval Achshav Einu Melech. He's saying, I was the king. I was the king over Israel. And I was the king over, that's why it said, I need Melech B'Yisrael, Al Yisrael B'Yushalayim. It's like pointing out like smaller and smaller areas of his reign. Ibn Ezra similarly says there, In Yane Sefer Yoru Ki Ba'achris Yamav Chibru Ki Ilu Yomar Ledoros Habayim. It's clear that he must have written this as he was at the end of his life for the future generations. As we know, we talked about at the beginning, of the three books he wrote, we said Mishle, Proverbs is what he wrote, Shir Shirim was first when he's full of the youthful romance and excitement and passion, so he writes the Song of Songs. Then he gets a little older, he thinks he knows a lot, you think you're wise. I'm not going to say it. You're wise when you're in your 20s, and so he starts writing Proverbs. So he writes Proverbs. But then, when you get real wisdom toward later in life, he starts to write Ecclesiastes, Kohelas. And that's the same. The point is, he's also, not only has he lived life, he's also experienced ups and downs. So this supports that theory that Kohelas was written at the end of his life, because it's also, he's looking back on his reign. Say, I was king, I did so much. By the way, this is part of why it's like meaningful to read it, because it's one thing if just any old person gets up and says, oh, here, let me tell you what I learned in my life. But someone who actually has experienced a lot and been through a lot of things and had real great successes and also very severe failures, it's like you want to hear from them about what they learned through that. So he concludes, so he's talking to the future, kach v'kach nesiti b'yimei chayai. I have gone through these struggles in my life, and I went through everything because I was king, so I really tried everything. And that's why he says, it's mentioning Jerusalem not just because it was first Israel and then just Jerusalem, but Jerusalem is known as the city of wisdom. It's the city that, Torah comes from Jerusalem. It's known as the city of wisdom. And so he's saying, when I'm about to tell you about my experiences with wisdom, it was in the city of Jerusalem, which was known in the world at that time, and I think again today, as a city where wisdom comes forth and a city of, real intellectual accomplishment. So I was at the height of, the experience of wisdom. Yeah, Deborah.
I mean, isn't there kind of a cognitive dissonance between power and time? Because time will take it away from you no matter who you are.
Right.
And if you're at the end of your life, looking back.
Yeah, I think so. But he's also that he had real failures. Right. So like it's also when you look back, because he was on top of the world. We often refer to I mentioned at the beginning, Sudat Shlomo Bashaito, like that. We refer to the 40 years of prosperity of Shlomo HaMelech as being the best, like in Jewish history, mm-hmm. the pinnacle. Right. And it's not just that his son, the civil war happened in his son's era; it happened in his life. Like he failed. And I don't want to give away the ending of today's discussion, but I mean we're going to go into it, but he thought that he could outsmart the Torah. Ultimately, he's the one who said, the Torah says, don't have too many horses if you're a king, because you have to go back to Egypt to get more horses. And he thought, yeah, but I could do it because I know the reason, so I won't go back. The Torah says, if you're a king, don't have too many wives, because they'll lead you into idolatry or whatever, because that was the style back in those days of, marrying for, what's the word? Alliances and political, political advantage, and be careful because that's going to lead you to all kinds of idolatry. And he said, no, but I won't do it because I am smart. I can overcome it. Other normal people, yeah, but not me. And like all these things that he thought he was wise enough to overcome, he didn't overcome.
But that was hubris. That wasn't wisdom.
Okay, fine. But I'm just saying, it's not just the age. It's also the fact that he did fail, and it was part of his failure was related to his wisdom. Like he thought he outsmarted the system. He still goes down in history as the smartest ever, but like he's just looking back on his life and like, and also, by the way, keep in mind the theory. There is a theory that Shlomo is writing this book as a comment, putting himself in Adam Harishon's shoes and saying, what did Adam, how did he see the world after he made his mistake, his sin with the tree of knowledge? Again, it all comes back to knowledge. He thought he could he wanted the more knowledge, and then he realized maybe I should have been happy with what I had. That was a mistake. So that's part of, like, it's all like looking back. So let's look at a few more commentaries here and discuss. So another one, it says, Midaik Masha Masinu Gimel Tore Melech Lashomo. There's three types of kingship he had. B'shlosha Sfarav, in the three books he wrote, as we just mentioned. In Shir HaShirim, just says Melech. Melech Stam, just says B'melech Shlomo, who calls him king. Melech and Melech Yisrael. In the beginning of Mishlei, it says Melech Yisrael. And here, it's Melech B'Yerushalayim. Those are the three ways he's called. Mishlei, Melech B'Yisrael, Koheles, Melech B'Yerushalayim. Vidarish ki achresha chata shenismata gedulaso. So it must be that after he sinned and his greatness was diminished, but madregos, little by little, hainu mitchila yard mimalchuso al kol olam. At the beginning, that's proof. The fact that he was referred to in the book of Shir HaShirim just as king, that's another way of saying he was king over the whole world. But that's why in Mishlei, he was just called Yisrael, king over Israel, and now just king over Jerusalem. It's a way of showing his gradual diminishment. And it fits also with the idea, with the concept that he wrote each book at different parts of his life. They both reflect different parts of a human life, the youthful excitement, you know, the middle age, think you know it all, and then the elderly kind of actual wisdom combined with also the actual experiences of being someone who was greatly powerful and then having diminished power and then having further diminished power. So now let's go into the other psukim because there's a lot to say here. And then, so then he said in Yud Gemel, in the middle of page 2 there, V'nesati yaslibi lidrosh l'tor b'chachmai, I really wanted to examine wisdom and explore it. Al kol asher nasa tachat ha-shamayim, everything that happens underneath the heavens, but it's inyan ra nasan elokim livnei adam lanushpo, but it's a bad thing that people are struggling with. But is it Jewish to say like, just be happy knowing nothing? Don't we want to know? Don't we want to have wisdom? Isn't it a good thing? In fact, the Tanakh says that when Shlomo asked for wisdom, he was rewarded for it. Because it said, you didn't ask for wealth and fame and riches. You asked for a good thing, wisdom. And we praise Shlomo for that. So what's so bad about it? So let's see some of the commentaries. First of all, what does it mean, latur ulatayer? Like to explore. That's how we say today, like to be a tourist. To explore wisdom. So the Torah Shmim there says, according to Midrash Rabbah, Ma'u l'tor v'chachma, ta'er l'chachma, to travel in wisdom, k'mo shekasev v'yasu es eretz Canaan. Like they actually spied the land of Canaan, they toured the land of Canaan. That's what he did. He wanted to like get a taste. Maybe what we're saying here is that Shlomo's wisdom wasn't deep, it was broad. He wants to know a little bit of everything. Maybe this is the challenge, right? Is it good to know, this is like a classic debate, should you know a little bit about everything? Or a lot about one thing. Maybe Shlomo's regretting that he knew a little bit about a lot, but he didn't go deep in one thing. There's benefits to both, right? It's great to know a lot about a lot of things because there's a lot of things to know about in the world. But maybe there's benefits of like going real deep in one area as well. That seems to be like one concern there. Look at the in the commentary there. He writes, Hor Tamim writes. He says, "Ki b'shnei devarim marbim b'chachma." There's two ways to gather wisdom. Ha'echad, one is b'kibus chachamim, gathering, being around a lot of wise people. Shayudeze mitbarera inyan. He's taking this a different way. If you have a lot of wise people to learn from, like great teachers, that's a good way to like talk to your teachers and get to learn from all of them. That's really important. V'habeis, but the other way to learn wisdom is b'sifrei limud tovim. To have good books. What's better? To have good teachers or good books? He's saying these are two different ways. One, the person that gathers wise people, nikra tayer lachachma. That is a tayer. That's one phrase. Zeh orech sifrei limud, the one who gets a lot of books, tovim, nikra she'ose lachachma toer. That's the person that makes wisdom beautiful. It's a big debate. No, I don't know. What do you prefer? Is it better to have great teachers or great books? I can see benefits of both. What? The problem with just books is that sometimes you think you know something and you realize you needed someone to like explain it to you. You don't really get it just from books. Sometimes books can be too theoretical. Sometimes you can be like, I read 10 books on a topic. I thought I knew it. And then I met someone who actually knows about it. And I realized I misunderstood. But then again, teachers... you're dealing with, they might forget something, or they're not always accessible every moment, or you can't necessarily, like, they don't always have time for you, or they don't explain things clearly.
But books don't quantify every human experience, whereas a teacher might have lived through things that, you know, no one's ever written about.
Right, right. And for sure in Torah we say that the ideal was to learn from a teacher. In fact, we weren't even supposed to write down the Torah. We wanted to have a teacher. But then because of practical considerations of, like, persecution and suffering, we had to write it down. And they even say, the truth is, today, they say you're supposed to have, you know, like, Vaseilach HaRab, you're supposed to have a rabbi. Some say that you can technically fulfill that by having good books, but it's not the same.
So I think it's significant that it's Chachamim and not one.
True.
Teacher, right? It's gathering
Chachamim multiple
together,
Chachamim.
Different perspectives, hashing out
right.
Like, what the, like, basis of the ideas are. Hmm. Because only in conversation do you
yeah.
really get. So.
That's a good point. Even having one rabbi, if you say, should I have one rabbi, one teacher, or a lot of books, even one rabbi, one teacher is not necessarily good because you need to have multiple perspectives, different people to talk to, let them debate it.
Right.
Right, interesting. You learn a lot from debates sometimes and, like, differences of opinion, and that helps clarify things. Interesting.
And it helps you see your own perspective.
Right, right. Very good.
I also see, Rabbi, see, like, a book is a limited knowledge. You can get to a certain point, you
right.
can't memorize everything. The teachers, the interactions make both of the participants learning more
right.
when they're teaching and they are learning.
Yeah. Yeah. The teacher sometimes will not even have thought of something until you ask a good question. They're like, oh, I didn't think about that. But now that you ask it, let's discuss it. But from a book, you can't do that because the book's closed. It's just what it is. Right. Interesting.
You can also misunderstand a book.
Right. It's much easier to misunderstand a book. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, interesting. So this is part of, but what this commentary is arguing is that Qoheleth did both. He had great teachers. He had great books. He was trying everything. Still wasn't good for him. Still wasn't working. The Midrash also says here in the next source, he says, Melame shelo rak b'divrei Torah bilvad hayashlomo tayer. Clearly, Shlomo was not just learning Torah. He was trying to learn everything. He was trying to learn, he was like one of the first Torah umada. Like, you know, learn everything. Learn Torah and all the sciences and all wisdoms. Ela al kol asher nasa tachat ha-shamayim, everything. He wanted to learn, he gives examples there, even to, like, cooking. And try to we know that he had a lot of remedies. He did a lot of medicine. Okay. Another commentary says, what was the bad part of it? Inyan ra. So what's so bad about it? What was so bad? Look at this. This explanation says, in the Midrash says, Rabbi Bun Omer Zeha Mamon. It was the search for money related to wisdom. To Amar Mar, Ein Adam Yotzei Min HaOlam VeChatzi Taivaso BiYado. No one leaves the world with all their desires satisfied. Yeshem Mana Rotzei Lasos Mehem Meitaim. First one has 100, they want 200. Somehow the concern here was as, you know, money being related to wisdom, which seems to be a side thing, but yeah. You're saying the struggle
could
was...
Could that be one of the challenges of humanity?
Uh-huh.
Not that the
interesting.
Wrong,
right.
It goes back to what you said about the Adam and Baba.
And the issue he struggled with was the topic of Ra, of evil itself. That's an interesting way to read it. That's not the pshat, but that's definitely, you could read it that way. That's really interesting. Yeah, I like that.
He also sounds very voracious.
Gracious?
Voracious.
Yeah. He was. He wanted to know everything, right.
And to me, it's that smacks of ego, which
uh-huh.
is what the downfall is at the end, because you're still stuck with
uh-huh. Well, definitely, and actually, as this commentary was saying, it definitely is not being satisfied. It's like, there is a value also being satisfied. Like, yes, wisdom is great, and knowing things very deeply, but, like, also a certain point, like, being satisfied with what you have and recognizing, like, there's a... Right, so let's look at a little more. Good. So he says, Reisias kol hamasim. I looked at everything. Everything, right? Just like everything's a mess, right? I looked at everything. Kol hamasim shenasu tachat ha-shemesh. Looked at everything under the sun. Vehine ha-kol hevel uraos ruach. And everything is just bad. This is where it seems to be really depressing. Right? Except, of course, the rabbis want to say, in the Midrash, they say, chutz mitshuva ma'asim tovim. He doesn't mean good deeds. Good deeds, no, that's good. He means everything besides for, like, Torah and good deeds, of course. that Michael Fox says in here. This verse is equivalent to 1:2 at the very beginning, where it says Hevel, Havelim, Hakol Hevel, right? He says, and it helps define the scope of all in that verse. What is Hevel? Meaning what's bad? Rather, it's not everything. It's the happenings, the action, the news. In other words, like the news, the things that people do, that's what's bad. All of the happenings. Luckily, right now in the world, the news is all good. But in his time, it must be that the news was bad. I'm joking, obviously. So like he's actually limiting it. Like I read it at first saying, everything's bad in the world. I'm saying, no, the action, the things that are happening in the world, there's a lot of bad things happening. It doesn't mean everything's bad. And that's when the rabbis say, no, chutz mitshuva ma'asetovin, like there are good things happening in the world. It's just like the news, like the major world events are bad. But there's a lot of good. I don't know. I went to look at the world and examine what's happening. I realized there's a lot of bad stuff happening. I guess. Maybe we have his shoulders to stand on. So now we know the world's so messed up.
You're the king. You're isolated from the world. And then you
right.
have to explore.
Or he has to see it. Yeah. Okay. So then look what he says. This is a famous line here, actually. This is the Gemara in Brachos deals with this a lot. Me'uvas lo yuchal itkon. A straightened thing can't be fixed, can't be, a bent thing can't be straightened. Something that's, once something's lost, that's what the Gemara in Brachos talks about this. Like, if you missed davening, Mariv, it can't be made up. Certain things can't be made up, like if it's Erev Shabbos. Some things you just can't make up. So he's saying, some things, another example that the Gemara gives is like, it's in the source there, but it's if someone has an illegitimate child who's considered a mamzer by Jewish law, which is very difficult. In most cases, they would not, it's hard for a child to actually be considered a mamzer by Jewish law, but if that would happen, it can't be fixed. There's no fix for it in halacha. So that's one example that they give. The Rashi there says, Muvas bechayav lo yuchal itkon. In your life, you can't fix it. Mishameis, but once you die, Mishatarach be'erev Shabbos, Yochav Shabbos. If you prepared in ahead of time, then you get to eat the rewards. In other words, in this world, a lot of things don't get resolved. But if you do the right thing, it will get resolved in the world to come. Which fits in with their whole commentary of that this is all talking about things underneath the sun. Meaning, everything underneath the sun is bad. Yeah, because we don't understand it properly. If we had the ultimate perspective, ultimate way of seeing things from God's perspective, the world does make sense, and it is good. So too, things get broken in this world. We think that they're broken beyond repair, but actually they are restored, but that's because we believe in a world to come, in a place where things are better. So things seem broken to us. So basically what he's saying is his perspective. From his perspective, things are bad, which by the way, is so beautiful that it's coming from him. Like he's saying, I was so wise. I thought I would understand it, but you know what? From a human perspective, I don't have a good answer for you. Like from human perspective, things are bad. But there are good in reality, in the ultimate reality. It's just not from our perspective. Yeah. Yeah, for a certain amount of generations, but for that child. Same for that child, there's no fix you can have. They can marry another mom's there, but in other words, there's no way to undo it. Some things, the point is there's some things that mistakes that are made that can't be undone. But that's why I like that Rashi there, saying like, it can't be undone in this world. But in the ultimate sense, if you do the right thing, it can be fixed in the ultimate, in the long term, in the big picture. Right, right. There's just one more pasuk. So let's just look at one more because we're almost out of time. So go to page 4. Let's start to wrap up. By the way, Fox quotes in his commentary. I just thought that was interesting. He says, the Egyptian sage Ani uses the twisted stick as a metaphor for a foolish or perverse pupil who, he insists, can be educated. The crooked stick left on the ground, if the carpenter takes it, he straightens it, makes of it a noble staff. So the question is, if Shlomo was referring to in some way that there was this Egyptian tradition that you could take a twisted stick and fix it. And Shlomo's saying, nope, you can't even fix it. You can't even fix that. But, that's the jaded perspective of Qohelet. In the last two psukim here, he says, Debarti ani im libi. So I spoke to my heart. Lemor ani hine higdalti v'safti chachma al ko asher haya lefanai. I was the wisest person before me, all Yerushalayim. I knew so much. So in other words, Ba'avur Hayos Halev Mishkan Aruach. Ibn Ezra says, it's talking about the he says his heart here, because the heart is the seat of the soul. Hanivra Beguf Betrila, because they believe that the heart was born, was created first in the womb, and then everything went from there. But there's something, the Va'moach Sar Tzava Haya Halev. The Moach I went too far. The Moach Sar Tzavaya. The Moach is the commander. Halev Kinu L'Chachma. But the heart is like a way of saying it's the wisdom. Your brain is only knowledge of facts, whereas your heart is actually wisdom and emotion. And then he concludes in the last pasuk, and we'll just talk about this for a minute before we close. Ve'etna libi ladas chachma v'das hololus. So I tried to know wisdom and knowledge, but it was just v'das hololus and even frivolity. V'sichlus yadati shegam zehu ra'un ra, and ra'un ruach. And I saw even this is all just fleeting. So there's a few commentaries on this. Like for example, Ibn Ezra says, Achrei shelamadati chachmos v'safti. I learned so much wisdom. So then, what this pasuk means is nesati libi ladas ikra holus. I also wanted to know like frivolity. So in other words, it's almost like it sounds like his holus we usually refer to as like partying. And so it's almost like he's saying I learned the wisdom of book knowledge and world wisdom. Then I wanted to understand like people's behavior, like almost maybe psychology, or he wanted to learn like how people act or how people celebrate. And I realized, I thought maybe that he thought like maybe that's the answer, because all the wisdoms, all the sciences didn't satisfy me. But then I realized also that nope, that's also that I also realized is worthless. So that didn't satisfy him either. It's just interesting his whole relationship with wisdom. Either you know, I think the issue with Adam, like he's identifying with Adam HaRishon, that he tried to get wisdom and like that wasn't successful, or he wanted to know more, but he ended up paying a price for that, or that he thought that he could outsmart the Torah, as we discussed. He also realized this is Raun Ra, this is like Raun Ruach, this is just a struggle, or like maybe like the pain of wanting to know more, realizing like as we've discussed, you can't know everything. Like I tried to know everything, but like either because we forget things or just like it's too vast. There is a verse in Job, in Eov, I meant to put it on the page here, where Job refers to saying, like, even people can only know so much. At the end of the day, only God has a true wisdom. And, like, he's identifying with Job in this case, that Job also recognized we can't understand why bad things happen. Our wisdom is limited, and, like, maybe it's the limits of our wisdom, or the issue of knowledge versus wisdom. You can know a lot, but, like, actually attaining wisdom takes a lot of work. And you can't just like try to latour, like I'm going to take a tour of all the knowledge in the world, but that doesn't make you wise. Wise requires actually struggling in life, as he did. Yes, Deborah.
You seem to be equating wisdom with satisfaction. And satisfaction is, again, an ego-driven, you know, set of parameters.
Right, but it could be the way I'm reading it. Because then again, he says, Ra'un Ruach. He wasn't saying satisfaction. He's just saying, like, it's empty. It's worthless. It, like, but maybe satisfaction,
he's
right.
He's making a judgment. Judging the world from his own ego perspective, uh-huh. Having had the body experience.
Right, it does, right, I hear that.
I understand, but the point is, real wisdom is the step back. The
right.
Real wisdom sees everything in process.
Right, right.
And not, you know, it sounds like he's like a little bit of a
the ego's getting in the way, right? Well, it's part of the challenge. We've talked about this in the past also. It's part of the challenge of being raised in the palace. And this is part of...
I did this and I did that. And why didn't I that? And why didn't I that?
Right. And part of it now is he's admitting. He's being humble here to admit, like, I thought I would have it all at that point, and having it all wasn't satisfying.
And having it all is not possible in the
world, right,
that we're in.
It sounds like he also went into this hoping that it would be positive. Right?
Uh-huh.
Like he had this this view that like he would find out all these wonderful things about the world,
right?
And that either he'd be able to fix things or he'd have, you know.
He did, right? He wanted to fix, right?
So then that pasuk where he's like, "Crooked things can't be made straight."
Uh-huh.
Could be an expression of deep disappointment, but it also could be a little bit of relief that like okay, you can understand the nature of things without needing to fix them.
Uh-huh. Right, because he couldn't fix it. That's great. I love that. Because, that pasuk is important. He couldn't fix it. Some things can't be fixed, no matter how wise you are, how much knowledge you attain.
And how deeply you understand
it. How deeply you understand it. And then, so then let's go to the last verse.
The twisted and crookedness.
Yeah, right. You have to somehow be okay with some things being twisted and broken and unfixable. And that's life. That's reality. That's true wisdom, right? Maybe that's part of the idea, is he's actually achieved some level of wisdom in recognizing the limits of wisdom. Right, very good. So then let's look at the last verse. It fits perfectly. So then the last verse, a famous verse, and it's one commentary I want to show you in particular, and we'll close. It says, Ki berov chachma rov kas. Sometimes just with more wisdom is more anger. The Yosef Das, Yosef Machov. The more you know, the more pain you are in. And, there's a lot of interesting, just a couple points on this. Ibn Ezra says, Kasher bikesh ladas ha-sichlus ra'aki ha-maskel ha-makir divri ha-olam barov chachmasa. When someone tries to know everything, tamid yei lo kas, you're just going to always end up creating angry, machov, and pain. V'lo yismach b'bani mi'avur da'ato she'achrisam lamus. Like, for example, you can't even be happy if you have children because you're going to think to yourself, one day they're going to die. Like, you can't even be happy. Like, oh, someone says, oh, Mazel Tov, you had a baby. Yeah, but they're going to die eventually. Because if you're thinking too much, like, you can't, some things you just can't be thinking about at all times. You have to, calm down from some of that. It's like, you get over-obsessed with, trying to know everything, just being wise. There's also aspects of life that are not about wisdom. There's also aspects of life that are about relationships, about emotion, about presence, not everything is wisdom. So look at this fascinating Gemara. He says, the Gemara says, Amar of Adab Rabbi Chanina, Il male lo chetu Yisrael lo nitein lahem ela chamisha chumsha Torah. If the Jews wouldn't have sinned, the plan was just to give them the five books of Moses, the Sefer Yoshua. And Yoshua, because that's where they scout out the land and take over Canaan, Eretz Canaan. Bilvad, just those six books. That was the Torah was meant to just be five books of Moses, the Chumash, and Sefer Yeshua. But Bilvad, she'archa shel Yisrael, who because you needed Yeshua to give you the borders of Israel. My time, but what happened? Ki berov chachma rov kas. The people sometimes knowing more is related to more sin. The more they sinned, we had to have more wisdom. It's backwards here. Like the sinning led to more information because apparently the other books of the Torah of Tanakh are the Musar aspects of it, not just the history. But we shouldn't have had to have that. But what I wanted to show you was this Kutzker. The Kutzker Rebbe. By the way, that Fox quotes Mendelssohn there. He says, Mendelssohn identifies the cause of vexation as the inability to attain the desired knowledge of hidden things, especially with regard to divine providence. That's really his vexation, was he wanted to understand God's ways. But the Kutzker Rebbe had a great line. I don't speak Yiddish, really, but here's how he said it in Yiddish. Keken zol men, abra baldas zol men zayn. Let it pain you, but be smart. In other words, he said, sometimes we say ignorance is bliss, but the Kutzker Rebbe's thing was, yeah, but you know what? Sometimes you have to face the facts, the difficult facts of life, and just suffer. You can't just live a life of total ignorance and total bliss. Part of life is also recognizing the challenges and the struggles that are inherent in life, because our job is to try to make them better and do something about them, which is also an interesting perspective.
How old was Solomon when he wrote
this? Well,
later part of life.
It seems to be that it was the end of his life, right? Right. Yes.
And I feel like we've got to give credit to some of his earlier works where he sees the glory of the universe.
Right.
And so maybe at this point he realizes that he's super blessed with all this knowledge, but it's just too overwhelming. Human system cannot handle it.
Right. Maybe it's because there's a balance for everything. And he didn't balance wisdom. He thought, yeah, at a certain point, wisdom gave him the appreciation for nature and God. And then he took it too far, that he can't even be happy when a child's born. Like, that's like there's a limit to wisdom, and there's going to be frustrations. And yeah, I like the way we've concluded this.
Did he take it too far, or is it just because he had this great blessing, but then it just didn't, throughout his whole life, a human brain couldn't handle the knowledge that he had?
Maybe that's the way to say it. It was just, for a human, it was too much for...
Yeah, because he knew a lot, knew a ton.
Right.
The wisest of all men.
Right. But his focus was just on wisdom. And clearly, just focusing on wisdom led him astray and didn't let him direct Kralis.